Forest.
Hello, can you hear me out there in Camp Wozniak?
Yes, yes I can.
Very good. Is this Staff Sergeant Ramirez?
Speaking, yes it is.
Very good, very good. You probably have more experience with this than I. Is there a bit of a delay when I speak to you and you hear me?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Then I'll have little spaces after the things I say and before I interrupt you so that we can work that out and we won't be talking over each other. Thank you very much for... Okay, thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate your service. And the thing that I really was thinking about on the drive over this morning was I wanted to know if, as you had the Sangin Valley in your rearview mirror, how do you feel that you and the rest of the guys are leaving it? And what do you think its future is going to be?
Felt good to leave. I don't think it's really hit me yet that I've left because I'm still in Afghanistan. But it was good to leave. It was my second time over there, so to see it close down and go through all the motions of that felt good. And as far as how they're gonna do down there, I'd say they got a good chance as long as they keep doing what they were doing when we left. Just keep patrolling and doing the right thing. So I think they'll do good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do they have the equipment they need to do the job that you've helped them do over the years?
Yes. A matter of fact, when I was before we even closed it down, they were pretty much doing everything on their own. We just we were like a middleman to help them out whenever they had like certain medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
When they struck an IED or received contact and they had some kind of wounded, we would just help them out with their medical. But as far as like taking the fight to the Taliban, they were the ones leading the charge on that. And pretty much doing their daily patrols and whatnot. So, yes, I'd say yes, they have what they need.
That's great. From what I understand, you were in that post three times over the last 2 years?
No, twice.
Twice?
I was there twice. This is my second time.
Okay. When was that then? So that I might have that wrong.
I want to say it was September 2012, and then I left in April 2013, and then I crossed to 1-7 to a new unit, and I came right back over here as soon as possible. So we got here in March time frame, and then. So whenever they ask us to leave, then that's when I leave.
But you came, you got that back there in March of 14.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Can you tell me about some of the more stressful things that you experienced while you were there?
On this deployment, not too much stressful things. Because like I said, most of the things that... most of the things were being run by the ANA and the AUP, the Afghani Army and the Afghani Uniformed Police. They were the ones pretty much doing everything. So as far as being stressed out as combat-wise, receiving gunfire or anything, not too much. We took a couple of rocket attacks during the election, but nothing serious.
How did the election go? I heard it went very well.
Yes, a lot of people from what they told us showed up to vote, so that was pretty good.
Okay. What was the other period that you're in the Sangin Valley in 2012 and 2013? What was that like?
that was a little bit different. We were still patrolling, doing partnered patrols with the ANA. Uh-huh. And then during the relief in place with the previous unit, we were still getting into contact with the Taliban and still fighting with them. And then, like, I'd say, like, 3 months halfway into that deployment, we were told that it was time for them to start leading the taking charge of the fight. So we just helped them out when they needed it as a quick reaction force. And they pretty much that was the beginning of them taking over, I'd say.
When was the beginning of them taking over? I'm not totally clear there.
All right, I want to say October, November time frame. Like 3 months into that deployment, they started leading the fight with the patrols and everything versus doing partner patrols. And then they just started doing the patrols on their own. So 3 months into that deployment.
I've heard people say that a lot of times this is an IED war. Is when you're doing patrols out there, was it an IED war or was it a different kind of war?
For the first time out there,
yeah,
it was a little of both. You had to worry about the IED threat and also with the random sporadic fire gun contact that they would shoot us from a tree line or a little wadi or a abandoned compound. So it was a little of both. And then for this this deployment, not really much I could tell you about, except that we stood a lot of posts and just to help them out on their casualties. We medevaced and casualized a lot of their the ANA that may have stepped on an IED or radio-controlled IED. So, so as far as, like, contact or anything, they didn't really attack the FOB except for the rocket attack during the elections. They tried to disrupt it, but people still got out there and still voted. So there was still a high number turnout.
Okay. Were any of your people wounded during your two tours in the Sangin Valley?
No, let me phrase that. I want to say yes for the first one. An engineer stepped on a low-debt IED, and then he got his leg broken. And then the ANA that went over there to help him, I believe he stepped on the second IED and then became an amputee. He lost his leg. And then the other casualty was during a convoy. They were trying to resupply somebody, and then I think they hit an IED. I can't really comment on that one because I don't know the whole facts on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know the whole details on it.
Yeah. Did you see that other incident about the two guys that had the leg injuries?
Say again?
The incident with the two fellows that had the leg injuries, the engineer and the ANA guy. Did you see that, or did you hear about it, or what?
That was another platoon that was on patrol during that event. So they came out of FOB Champer, so they were part of our company.
Sure. Okay. In case we run out of time, I want to learn a little bit about your family while I have the chance. The reason they called me is because I work in Northbrook, and I understand that you're from Northbrook. Is that the case?
My wife's from Northbrook. I was born and raised in Chicago.
Oh, yeah? Okay. What neighborhood are you from?
Yeah. I was northwest side, Lawrence and Kedzie.
North and Kedzie? Okay. Very good. Who's your wife?
Heather Ramirez.
Heather? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what her maiden name is?
Heather Weinberg.
Weinberg? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. How long have you been married?
9 years.
9 years? Do you have kids?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me about your children.
what can I tell? One of them is Max. He's the oldest. He's 4 and a half. And the other one is Robert. He's 2.
God bless him. How often do you get a chance to get home?
Not too often, because this is like in less than a year, a little under a year that I've deployed. So, and they're back in Illinois, and I'm stationed at 29 Palms. So whenever I get time, like after this deployment, I'll get a leave block. I'll be home for however many days they give us. I go home and spend as much quality time as I can.
So when you have not been in Afghanistan, you've been at 29 Palms, is you go back and forth, or tell me about that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Whenever like I get days off or 96, 72, any kind of holidays.
Yeah.
I'll fly as quick as I can home and enjoy as much family time as possible. I'm trying to get them to move out to 29 Palms, so. But it's kind of hard with my kids. I'm sorry?
Is that where... we were talking together right there. Go ahead.
I try not to move my kids around too much because I want them to have a... I want them to have, like, a set, steady schedule and a certain with my family and her family over there. I try not to move them around as much so it doesn't affect their life as much. So as soon as I'm done with this this deployment and this duty station, I'll probably move to another one, and I'll try to move them out there with me then. By that time, they're a little – well, they'll be another year older, so it shouldn't be that bad moving them around.
The I'm not clear on where Mrs. Ramirez and the kids live now. Are they at 29 Palms? Are they in Illinois?
No, they're in Northbrook, Illinois right now.
They're in Northbrook, huh? Okay, very good. Oh, so that's no fun. How is this working out for your family?
It's good. It's a little stressful at times, taxing, but we get through it. She's a strong woman, and she helps out. She has my she supports me. So, but it's hard because I think she does more than me raising 2 kids alone, pretty much.
Okay. How long have you been in the Marines now?
I'm going on 14 years. I'm at 13 now.
13 years, yeah. Can I ask how old you are, Sergeant Ramirez?
Yes, 39.
39, yes, yeah. Okay.
Yes. I'll be 40 this September.
You sound like a career guy. Is that the case?
Yes. It didn't start out that way because I got out the first time and then I came back in.
Oh, really? You left and you went back in, huh?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that at all? What the thinking was on going out and coming in?
It was a multiple, a lot of things because for my first enlistment, I wasn't part of the initial push into Iraq.
Yeah.
And then we did that, and then we came back, and then I was coming toward the end of my contract, and I kind of felt burnt out at the time, and I left, and I knew it wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I just wanted a break. So I got out, went to school for a year, and then I wasn't happy with school because My close friends were in Fallujah. They were fighting out there.
Yeah.
And then I felt kind of guilty, like I betrayed, like I left them. So I ended up coming back in.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of guys say that. Do you think that was a reasonable thing to think that to feel guilty about those guys still being out here, or would do you look at it differently a few years later?
I look at it differently now because during that time when I got out, that's how I met my wife. So I guess it was all for a reason. Because if I would have stayed in, I would have never met my wife. I wouldn't have had my two kids. So I stopped beating myself up for it. So I'm two awesome kids and a hot wife. So I'm pretty happy.
How did you meet your wife?
Oh, man. She'll tell you some other story. I don't know. That's something you're going to have to ask her because we have different perspectives on that.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to later on or at some point for her phone number so I can call her up and ask her a couple of things and put it in the story and see how she's doing. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah, that's okay. Fine.
So tell me about Iraq.
Oh man, it was pretty. It's my first time ever in combat. It was pretty wild. I was with the 2-1 Second Battalion, 1st Marines, and we were part of the MEU, Marine Expeditionary Unit. They sent us in. We took down Azubayir, the port. We were part of the decoy for the saving of Jessica Lynch. So, a lot of things at the time that happened, I didn't think it was like of great importance. And then, like when we came back from that deployment, we found out everything. And then I remember a blurb on the news about Jessica Lynch, and I was like, I remember this. Like we were just a decoy. 2-1 was.
What did you do as a decoy?
There was a suspected reports that the Fedayeen and some Iraqi army guys were held up in a police station, so we had to go in there and clear it, and then we did, and then we set up a blocking position, and I believe Fox Company set up another blocking position on a bridge. And while this was all going down, like at, I couldn't even tell you, like at 0 dark something in the morning, some Black Hawk helicopters flew overhead, and that's all I knew from my part. And then later on, our battalion commander told us that we were part of a rescue mission for Jessica Lynch. And I was like, okay, whatever, at the time. And until I got back to the States, that's when I realized how serious it was and, like, what happened. Because during the war, you didn't really get much news. You just did what you did. And then afterwards, when you came back, you realized what happened and how bad it looked from other perspectives, I guess.
Okay. It's an interesting story. I wasn't clear exactly what it was that you guys were doing at the decoy part. Can you try to run that one by me again?
Yeah, because there were suspected Fedayeen and Iraqi army held up at a police station. So we were sent there to attack the objective, like that police station, so they wouldn't go to the hospital where she was being held at, her, and like I guess like interrupt the rescue mission or something. So.
So when you went there, what happened?
Nothing really. I guess they saw us coming and they bugged out. And then from there on, we just ended up doing a. We ended up doing a blocking position, and we just held it till morning, and then we collapsed and went straight to the hospital.
Okay. The can you tell me about your combat experiences in Iraq?
Yeah. The first day was was the scariest because you didn't know what to expect. I was running on adrenaline for like the first 3 days. I didn't sleep.
What the first 3 days?
Say again?
I was asking you for 10-9. You're doing what for the first few days? I didn't quite catch it.
For the first 3 days, I didn't really sleep. We were just moving from location to location, dismounting the Amtrak. And then, like, sporadic fire here and there. But once we made the breach, and then there was, I'd say, like, we drove into Iraq for about 20 minutes, and then as soon as we got 20 minutes into it, we saw some Iraqi soldiers surrendering. They were waving a white flag, so we got out to detain them, but that was like an ambush. They were pretending to surrender while everybody else started shooting at us.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, and then one of my fire teams got pinned down. And I went over there to help them because they were in a fighting position. I went over there to help them. I ran over there, threw a couple of grenades. And the guy that was in the fighting hole kept on, I guess he used this, his dead buddy's body and used it to cover it. So once I went in there to check out the fighting hole, he was still alive and he pointed his AK at me and shot like a burst at me. So I ended up coming back down off the hill, the berm, the little fighting berm, threw another grenade in there and pretty much blew him up. So my fire team stopped being pinned down, and then I continued to clear the whole area, and then we took down the CP, me and my one of my team leaders, Juan Alanis. He's a good friend. He's a police officer in Portland now, I believe. And David Hernandez, he was my point man. He's I believe he's in SOI now. I keep in contact with most of them, everybody from my squad.
Gotta ask you. You said the guy squeezed off a burst stitch. How did he miss you?
Oh, cause I have to tell you the truth. Cause I came in from a different. He expected me to come from a certain direction. I guess he expected me to come from the front, and I went around the fighting hole, and I came in from the backside. And then he was pointing his AK, and then by the time he saw me and I saw him, he shifted his AK over, and he shot the burst at my face and completely missed, and I just ended up getting the hell out of the way, chucked another grenade, and blew him up.
You say he shot the first guy in the face? Is that what you said?
No. He tried to shoot me in the face. Like.
Oh, he tried to shoot you in the face. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know how he missed out.
Gotcha. Apparently, you were a sergeant at that time as well.
No, yes, I was a sergeant. I'm a staff sergeant now.
Yeah, but what about them? You sound like you had your own. That was your platoon.
No. I was just a squad leader. That was my squad.
Your squad leader. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Out here, I'm a platoon sergeant out here.
Oh, okay. Okay. Can you tell me about anything else in Iraq that might fascinate me?
I don't know. For my actions, I received the Bronze Star. Would it be?
Under what circumstances?
For that firefight and killing like about 7 that they reported, but it's a lot more.
You said for that firefight, and I didn't hear the other things you said.
Because that was the initial firefight, just to get to the area, and then from there on, I swept and cleared. Me and my team leader swept and cleared the whole. I don't know how to describe it, because it was like a berm. Inside, on top of these berms, they had like these fighting holes. It's kind of hard to describe. And we just kept going down the line, knocking people out, pretty much shooting people. I don't know. Do you want to get graphic like that, or? I don't know.
Actually, I didn't hear most of what you said, so I can't tell you whether I want to get graphic or not. the end of your sentence, I just didn't hear it, so I don't know what you said.
Well, I'm just saying that me and my team leader ended up clearing fighting hole to fighting hole, so we ended up shooting a lot of guys.
How does that settle? When you think about it, when you go back and think about days like that, What goes through your mind?
I really don't think about it too much. I don't dwell on it. I did what I did, and I had to be done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said I did what I did, and what was the tail end of that sentence?
It had to be done, so it's either him or me.
Oh. Sure.
I don't think about it, but every now and then it pops into your head. You just
sure.
I don't know how to describe it.
Okay. What was that last word you just said?
I don't know how to describe it. What's that?
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I wouldn't know how to describe it. Like, you're asking me if I think about it? Yeah, not really. I try not to. And if it pops up in my head, I
mm-hmm.
like in and out. I'll get like feel like my heart pounding, and that will be it. And push it back to the keep moving.
Back to what?
Push it in the back of my head. Try not to really think about things like that.
Okay. What do you see in your life in the near term? What do you want to do with your career? What's that?
I only have after this enlistment, I have one more enlistment, and then I'm eligible for retirement.
You say you one more hit, and then go for retirement?
No. After this enlistment, I only have one more left, and then I'll be eligible for retirement. I'll complete 20 years. And then once I retire, be with my family, make up for all the lost time, spoil my kids and my wife, and try to find a job that pays more and least amount of work.
Have you missed a lot of stuff with your kids? I imagine you have.
Yes. I just recently missed my wife's birthday.
You just missed your wife's birthday? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was on the 7th.
What did you say?
If you read, It was on May 7th. If you get a chance, write in there. I said happy birthday. Try to get some Broncos.
Okay. I will. What's their phone number? You might as well tell me while you got me.
Okay. 847.
Yeah.
207-0768.
Okay, here's what I got. 847-207-0768. Right?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. What about the kids? Have you missed important things with your children, your boys?
Yes, I've missed a birthday. I was blessed with being there for both of their births. So not everybody in the military gets that. So I can't complain. So, but I've missed some birthdays and some special holidays that they would. I would have liked to have been there.
Yeah. Did you see your kids walk for the first time? Probably not.
No, not my second son. The first one, I was there for his first couple steps.
Oh, that's good. How do you feel about the way we've left Iraq?
I don't know. I thought we left it in good hands. I'd say we left it in good hands because when from the initial push, because I went there twice as well. Where it was like kinetic kind of fighting here and there and whatnot, and then with my buddies in Fallujah when they fought it out, and then me going back in I want to say it was 07. It was a big change. I was patrolling with the Iraqi police and everything, and the Iraqi army. Everything was calm and peaceful when I was there. So we left it in good hands. Whatever happened from there on, I don't know.
Okay. You went back in 07, you said?
Yes.
Okay. So when did you leave, about 05 or so?
Say again?
When did you leave the Marines the first time, 05?
No, I left the Marine Corps for when I first got out was in 2003, December.
Oh, we left in 2003, so I got you.
Yeah, I left right after the initial invasion, and then my unit ended up going to Fallujah. And when all that fighting was going on, that's when I was like, I went through that phase where I was like, I abandoned them when they needed me most, I guess.
Say that again. You went through that stage of what?
I felt guilty for leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, that was real rough in Fallujah. But by the time you got there, it was pacified to a great extent.
Yes, because I came back. I got out in 03, December, and then all of 04, I went to school. And then I came back in 05.
Okay. Where'd you go to school, by the way?
In Taft High School.
Oh, you went to school at Taft, yeah. I meant, where you went to school after you left in 03?
Oh, no. No. When I got out of the Marines, I went to Elgin Community College.
To which community college?
Elgin?
Elgin Community College. Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's pretty far away. Does Mrs. Ramirez, does she live with her parents in Northbrook? Is that what she does? Or do you have
yes,
a...
they're staying with my in-laws because to get help. They're helping her out, with the kids.
Right, right. Do you think it's a problem that a lot of people in service don't really make enough money so that their spouses can live a relatively worry-free life on their own?
To tell you the truth, I have no idea what other people do or what would they do with their money, so that's kind of hard. I'm living all right. Can't complain.
You're living what?
I'm living okay. So it's not as bad as people. I don't know. That's hard to say because that's what people do with their money, and I'm very how can I say it? Cheap, I guess.
Yeah, but now, did you tell me that your wife is living with her parents, or she's living in a separate place?
No, she's living with her parents, but that's because my in-laws wanted to help with the kids. That's the only reason. We could afford to live out in an apartment or a house, if that's what you're asking me. I'm not.
That is what I'm asking.
Right.
Yeah.
No. I'm not hurting our money. They're just doing it to help out with the kids for stability and having more family. Since I'm not there, my in-law would be like the father figure to help out, like her grandfather.
Yeah. Can you tell me what was going on between 2005 and 2007?
I ended up with another unit, 1-4, 1st Battalion, 4th Marines. And I checked in there, and we just prepped for the deployment.
You did what with the deployment?
We did a training cycle. We did the whole training for deployment. Then we deployed, and we were on reserve in Kuwait for Steel Curtain. When they cleared out Husseibo, Iraq,
yeah.
When they did that clearing out, we were supposed to go in there and help out, but they didn't really need us. They took care of it without us. So we stayed in Kuwait for 2 weeks. We trained there, and then we just got back on ship and continued on with the MU.
You just got on ship and continued on with what?
The deployment, going back on ship and continue with the Marine Expeditionary Unit.
Where?
Just pretty much everywhere, cutting grid squares, looking for wherever they needed us.
Wherever you mean it was in what country? You didn't tell me.
Well, we stopped in Kuwait to be the reserve to help them out, but they didn't need us, so we got back on a ship, and we just continued on with our deployment. So we just went from we stopped at where was it? Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, but these are all ports, so we didn't really do much in these areas, just so the ship could refuel, restock, and whatnot.
Okay.
I think we also stopped in UAE and Thailand.
You say Thailand?
Yes.
Wow. It's all over the world then. And wound up back in that. Go ahead.
What's that?
He says that's one thing that.
The Marine Corps has always given me. Like, I've gotten to see so many parts of the world that if a kid from Chicago, the north side, coming up in the ghetto, I would have never seen that in a million years if I never came into the Marine Corps.